is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 209 in the series. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. At the Franklin, Mass. Town Council meeting held on February 12, 2020, there was an extended discussion on housing and social services related to it. The presentation and discussion was led on the one hand by Lisa Audette, Executive Director of the Franklin Housing Authority, with assistance from the Franklin Senior Center on the transitional assistance discussion, led by Karen Alves, Senior Center Director, and Eri Rogers, Social Services Coordinator. As you'll hear during the recording, several others stepped up to comment during the course of the two presentations. They introduced themselves as they began talking per town council public meeting protocol. My show notes include the link to the Senior Center document so you can follow along. The Housing Authority portion did not include a public document. The recording runs approximately an hour and 20 minutes, so without further ado, here's the recording of the discussion on housing and social services from the town council meeting of February 12.
Item on tonight's presentation is the Housing Authority. Lisa Audette, Executive Director of the Franklin Housing Authority, and friends. Lisa, you could just introduce people that are
Good evening. My name is Lisa Audette. I'm the Executive Director of the Franklin Housing Authority. With me tonight, I have my Chairman, George DiNello, and Pete Brunelli, Commissioner on the Board.
Welcome.
I was invited here tonight to just give a little overview of the Housing Authority and what we do and how we try to help our local residents. The local housing authorities were created by the local governments following Mass General Law 121B. The local housing authorities own and operate the public housing properties in their communities. Local housing authorities are regulated and partially funded by the state, specifically the Department of Housing and Community Development. The local housing authority boards are ultimately responsible for ensuring that the executive director and their staff follow the laws, regulations, and rules set forth by the Commonwealth, DHCD. Local housing authority boards set policy for the local agency as well. So 760 CMR is the DHCD regulations. The Code of Massachusetts regulations that we follow, and these regulations have the force of the law. I have passed out my little presentation to you so you can make notes on that if you have questions for us later. The types of housing that we have at the Franklin Housing Authority, first and most is our elderly disabled housing. We have 161 one-bedroom units that we house. Seniors and people under the age of 60 that have disabilities. Additionally, we have four units of congregate housing. Congregate is a shared living facility. It's like a group home. So that unit is a four-bedroom, two-bathroom unit with four lockable bedrooms, and residents share the kitchens and living room. We have family units, both two and three bedroom units. We have 33 family units. One is a wheelchair accessible unit. Two Department of Developmental Service facilities that are one bedroom shared living houses. We have 16 units of housing for adults with developmental disabilities. And besides that, the Franklin Housing Authority has been pretty active, and thankfully the Board of Commissioners think outside the box, and we were able to obtain three other properties, adding four new units of low-income housing to the Franklin Housing Authority's housing stock. So to get an apartment at the Franklin Housing Authority, you have to first fill out an application. The state has taken over the whole application waiting list, so although we get to pull the list locally at each housing authority, We have no control who is on the top of the list, on the bottom of the list, where the applications are filled out. Different preferences and priorities are checked off on the applications, and that applicant will fall on the list where they're supposed to be. The applications are time-stamped when they get put in the system, and anybody who has the same status as any individual applicant will be given a preference or priority number, and that's where they're going to be placed. The timestamps, the sooner timestamps will be placed higher on the list than the people who apply later. So applications now can be picked up at the Housing Authority. They can also be done right online. You can go to mass.gov, apply for public housing, and that can be found very easily. It's a very easy application. There are 240 housing authorities in the Commonwealth. So when you go online and you look for the application and you're filling it out, you have the opportunity to check off any housing authority that you want to live at in the Commonwealth. So if you're looking for housing, for instance, in Franklin, you might also consider putting your name on the list for, say, Wrentham, Norfolk, Bellingham, Medway. You know, you can, even if you get housed at another housing authority, you can keep your name on the list at Franklin until your name comes up. You can just transfer from another housing authority. However, your status on the waiting list will reflect whether you were an emergency, for instance. You may not be an emergency once you have housing. So that might change your status on the list. So let's see what else I have. Eligibility. For elderly handicapped housing, you need to be 60 years of age, and or you can be a disabled person under the age of 60. Verification of a disability would need to be turned in if that was your claim. In the one-bedroom units, there can be two people that live there, but they do have to be related in some way. Family, well, not by marriage or anything like that, but it could be a couple, a same-sex couple, or, you know, sisters, or, you know, so there are rules regarding that. Family development needs to be two people or more that are related by blood, marriage, or operation of the law. Income eligibility is based on HUD's low income standards, and that changes every 2 years. It's relatively high for Franklin, which we're considered in the Boston metropolitan area, so our rents, our fair market rents, and our income limits are pretty high. Many people fall below the income limits. Also on the waiting list, we give preferences and priorities. We give preferences to local people. You can either be considered a local person by either residing in the town or working in the town. Veterans also get a preference, and minorities get a preference if our minority quota has not been reached, which ours has been reached. If it isn't reached, then a minority would go higher on the list, skipping anybody who isn't a minority. But if our quota is reached, then the list stays as it is. If a minority gets to the top of the list, they will be housed in the proper order. Priorities, emergency priorities also, we do give people emergency, and this is all regulated by the regulations at DHCD. So the Code of Massachusetts Regulations identifies what we consider emergencies. Homeless due to displacement by fire, flood, earthquake, or other natural cause would get the highest priority on our waiting list. And then we have other emergencies that would come below that highest priority, which would be homeless due to displacement by public action, eminent domain, something of that sort. Homeless due to displacement, sanitary code violations, that is another emergency. status or no-fault loss of housing. If you're living in an apartment building, the owner wants to sell it or wants to rent it to a family member and you have to leave, no fault of your own. Things of that nature, severe medical emergency, domestic violence, these are all emergency categories for placement on our waiting list. So our current waiting list, this is as of yesterday, we have over 3,500 people on our waiting list. A one-bedroom waiting list, we have 1,075 people on the list currently. 121 of those people have emergency status. 9 are local emergencies. 59 non-emergencies that are veterans, and of those, 9 are local veterans. And then we have 103 local standard applicants. The local standard applicant is just the bare minimum standard applicant, but they get 1 point better than everybody who lives outside of the town of Franklin. So the congregate, again, that is a 4-bedroom, 1-unit apartment, shared bathrooms and shared living room and kitchen. We have 172 people that are on our waiting list for that, for our emergencies. We have no local emergencies, but 4 local applicants on that list. Family applicants, we have 2,530 applicants currently. 468 of those are emergencies. 11 are local emergencies. 43 non-emergencies are veterans, 3 are local veterans, and 107 standard family applicants are on our list currently. So, are there any questions? Do you want to move on? The numbers are crazy. There is just not enough housing in the state of Massachusetts, in the town of Franklin, in the country for the people that need it. The incomes have gone up. People who are born and raised in this town, they go off to college, come back to this town, they can't live here. You can't afford to rent. You can't afford to buy a house. A lot of those people with college degrees would be qualified for public housing.
Thank you, Lisa. Questions or comments from the council? Councilor Rhodes.
Excellent presentation. I know you've been very eager to have the Housing Authority come and share some more information because this is a very pressing topic for so many people in town. Could you explain a little bit more about how the financing works, you know, what comes from the state or what comes locally and that kind of thing, and if there's anything more that we can do as a community to support those living in public housing in our town?
There are 2 types of housing, financially. There are either subsidized or surplus agencies. We're a surplus agency. Our operating budget is covered by the rents that we take in. The assistance that we get is primarily for modernization. The state gives us formula funding for modernization of the properties that we currently have. We get about close to $400,000 a year for modernization. Beyond that, when NOFAs come out, notification of funding available, when those are available, we look at them to see if there's something that we can do to obtain funding that way. More recently, the town of Franklin, the Affordable Housing Trust, helped us with a grant, a gift, really, of $150,000, which was leverage funding on a grant that we were able to obtain from the state, ultimately giving us $2.5 million in modernization funds. We're currently renovating 40 units of senior housing, gutting the bathrooms, renovating the kitchens, flooring, painting, all new windows, exterior doors. It's a great, great project that we're really proud to be doing, and we're really very thankful to the Affordable Housing Trust for helping us get that money.
If I might just
still have the floor, Councilor.
So I follow on to that. Is there a process in place for expanding the public housing that we have here in Franklin? Obviously, we face challenging budget times, you know, on all sides, but this is certainly a very pressing area. It's something that would be great to consider in the long run, even if it's not something that we can do immediately, but something to think about in the decade to come or the next 2 decades.
Mm-hmm. We have spoken with the town administrator and the previous administrator as well. We're always looking for opportunities to build additional housing. However, the funding is just not going to come from the state at this point. It is encouraging to hear the governor talk about housing as one of his priorities. It's very encouraging, especially given some of the past administrations. The Patrick administration was looking to regionalize public housing across the Commonwealth and do away with a lot of public housing and maybe even get rid of family public housing, which would have been devastating to so many people that really need this type of assistance. But the Housing Authority cannot afford to build a complex of affordable housing by ourselves. So hopefully with the town assistance and hopefully the state will be coming out with some development funds. Keep our fingers crossed. We're watching for it. I'm sure the town of Franklin would help us find a piece of land if we're able to get funding.
Thank you.
Well said, Councilor Earls.
Councilor Bazanti. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Ms. O'Day. I think one of the more discouraging things I learned over the last few months is on the priorities situation when someone is displaced due to a fire or something in an emergency, and they're on a Franklin list, but they get sent out of town. Why do they have to lose their placement on a Franklin list permanently and get put to the very bottom? Is there any reason that they can't stay on to keep their place on the Franklin list, and when they get back on their when they their situation is resolved locally, can't they keep their position in Franklin?
The code of Massachusetts regulations says that you are not eligible for emergency housing if you are housed. And so if somebody's homeless and they become housed, whether it's in another town or in another development in Franklin, we have four elderly developments, for instance. If they're placed somewhere where they didn't exactly want to be, they're way better off than somebody who still doesn't have a roof over their head. They cannot be considered emergencies anymore. Unless another emergency occurs, of course.
Councilor Blaney.
Lisa, you do a great job and your commission does also. I called you and you know how I feel about certain things. I think to follow up on Councilor Bazanti, the question isn't to get back on the emergency list. If someone was on a regular list, okay, and then they had the fire, and they now were placed, let it be out of town, okay? They're not put back on that regular list. I don't mean the emergency list. They should just go back right where they were on that regular list instead of going down to the bottom.
Anybody who's on our list as an emergency, the regulation says that when they are housed, they lose their emergency priorities. However, they remain on the list with the same timestamp that they had when they initially applied. They just don't have the emergency status anymore. So eventually, those people that lose their emergency status will hopefully eventually reach the top of the list and be able to be placed in the town that they're.
Are you saying they go back on the list where they were before they became an emergency?
They remain on the list based on their timestamp, and they lose their emergency status. So instead of being at the top where all the emergencies are, they go down where the standard applicants are, and they're in line based on the timestamp on their application.
And that timestamp was when they originally applied.
Yes.
So they don't go down to the bottom of the list.
No, they don't.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting, because I didn't get that out of our conversation and all, you know, when we spoke. I thought that they did get down at the bottom of the list. We've got to do something in Franklin, you know, for the housing situation here. And, you know, you drive around town and you look at places and all, And right now, uppermost in my mind, and I haven't even spoken to Jamie or to the chairman, but what about the St. Mary's School? Would something like that be something we could use for housing? If the church was in agreement, you know, with this certainly, but I mean, is that something that we could look at?
One of our current developments was the old Sarah Metcalf School, and we repurposed that building. We have 29 units of public housing in there. Given the funding and a property, we can make it happen.
That would be a good spot. And anybody that's out there listening, if they know of a place, just to let us know that we could do something, because Franklin is too much of a respected community, that we should not have homeless and we should have housing for people that need it. We really should in this town. It's embarrassing that we don't. So I mean, anything that we can do, town administrator, we're all in agreement to do this, because it's something that is in dire need.
Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. 100%. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Pellegrini. Councilor Chandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say that I've had the opportunity to work with you and your staff, and you guys do a great job with all the populations, which isn't easy. You really do a great job. The one thing I learned tonight that I was really happy to see, that the victims of domestic violence move up on the list, and I think that's a great thing. It's something that's not always available to people in those tough
times. It's not glamorous, but a lot of people need help, and they're definitely recognized as emergencies.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilor Chandler. Councilor DeLocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, and I also have worked with a couple of people, getting a couple of homeless people in, and that's been great, so I really appreciate that. But also, I know how hard you guys work, and sometimes some of the homeless people, unfortunately, don't want to be helped, and that's another issue. That's a mental issue. So I know you guys work really hard at that, but sometimes they just don't want to get housing. Anything we can do to get more housing would be perfect for you guys. Just want to thank you guys for all your hard work.
Thank you, Councilor DeLocco.
You do a great job, and we all know that, and we're all going to sit here and we'll compliment you, and at the end of the day, I think you know
that's why we're here.
That's why we brought you here, so we have something nice to say. Can you just you said there's four elderly locations right now, or can you just provide where they are in town so people know? I don't know if everybody knows where our sites are in town.
Three of them are actually at Central Park Terrace. The first one is units 1 through 40. They were built in 1960. In 1965, our second development was built at Central Park Terrace, and there are 40 additional units by the office. They're the little fourplexes. Those are the ones that are getting renovated right now. Our third senior development is up on the hill at Central Park Terrace. There are 8 plexes, and there are 56 units there. And that was the first development that we have. It was built in 1975. It's our first development that have wheelchair accessible units. We have 4 wheelchair accessible units in that development. The fourth senior development that we have is the Theron Metcalf School at 45 Winter Street, which was repurposed for senior housing. We have 2 independent wheelchair units, and the 4 congregate units there are also wheelchair accessible. We have family units. We have 28 family units located on Northwest and East Park Streets. They're duplexes. We do hope that that was our very first development, opened in 1948. They're very old. They have been renovated a couple of times, but we have, the commissioners and I have big plans for those units. Hopefully, when the funding comes, we're putting money aside to make those units look less institutionalized or less, you know, the projects. We don't like that. We want them to look and feel like home to our residents that we respect, and the better they enjoy their home, the better residents they're going to be, the better they're going to do in school, the better all around. So we do have some plans for that development in the future. We also have another family development on Walnut Avenue. There are two duplexes and one wheelchair accessible family unit. So we have 5 units over there as well.
Thank you. You went right into my follow-up question. So that was perfect. We did really well together, huh? But my point was, I mean, these are older buildings, and they need to be updated. And it's kind of sad that we've let so much time go on without adding more buildings to our housing stock, especially for the people that need them most in our community. And that's a sad state of affairs. And one of the reasons I had asked the question was to follow up on the age of the properties, because you had said you were putting money in. And I don't think any of us that have a house that was built in 1960 or 1948 wouldn't have put money into our houses by now. And that's really tough, because I know you fight every day to try to get something to get done over at each place. And you know, you and I have talked several times on that, so I appreciate that. Where does Eaton Place fall into all of this view?
They're not something that we have anything to do with.
Okay, so there's nothing up there that you manage or anything else?
No.
Okay, good to know. Because I think sometimes people, you know, kind of combine you with that, and I don't want people to go, well, they just built all these houses, all these apartments over there. They're not really your apartments that you're managing. And then I just wanted to commend you on working with the Affordable Housing Trust. Both groups are great people, and people that care about our community more than I could ever express our great gratitude and thanks for. So thank you, and thank you to the Affordable Housing Trust. I know they came up tonight to say hello as well. So keep up the great work, and I'm here to support you in any way I can. Thank you.
Councillor Kelly. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going close to the last, basically reiterating a lot of what's already been said by most of my councillors, but in a sense, I can't say enough about how much I appreciate what you do for the community. I haven't, unfortunately, had the privilege of seeing you guys here in front of us in quite some time, which is sad, because I think everybody needs to be reminded of, for all intents and purposes, our unsung heroes, which are you guys, who are working hard to support our families. I've known several families who have the benefit of utilizing the housing over in your area, and keeping them in town. Supporting their families means an enormous amount to me as well as to them. Nobody wants to have to leave the town. I mean, one of the unfortunate realizations is that things become unaffordable. Where I came from in Watertown, where I grew up, I was a young kid. The small Cape house that my mother and father bought in Watertown in 1968 was $18,000. It sold in 2004 for $450,000. I couldn't afford to buy the house. It was, I wanted to live in my home, but I just couldn't. So we found a house out here in Franklin, which at the time, believe it or not, seemed a lot of money, but even my house here in Franklin some 20 years later has taken off considerably. So it's understanding how the cost of the housing, it's just unaffordable. It's hard to live as we progress. I've also personally worked on several of your locations with the Tri-County students. We helped put the maintenance garage on the back of the shed on the back of the maintenance garage, as well as helped build the Beaver Court property as part of the housing project. And I've personally seen the condition of many of those facilities, as well as met a few people who've been in those buildings. And they definitely need and require some attention. You have my support, for sure, and you have the council support. 1,000% with whatever you may have, and by all means, come to us, speak to us on a regular basis, and I will be here to help you with any stretch you need. So, thank you for all the hard work. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you, Councilor Jones. Obviously, I'll finish out the council's discussion anyway. Piece of it. Obviously, thank you very much for all the hard work you do. You do so much with such a limited amount of resources. But just one point that I think, or I'd like to know, what's your annual turnover? How many
I would
how many, let's say, 121 emergencies, 9 local emergencies. So there's 130 applicants. In the course of a year, how many of that 130 can you accommodate? And again, I know it would change from year to year.
It does fluctuate from year to year. However, I think I can pretty much be sure that about 20 units a year is our average.
Okay. Thank you. I think it's an important number for some of the other questions that came up, which is the people on the emergency list. If somebody's 40 or on the emergency list, do they make the decision to go to Medway or go to Bellingham and bump back to 150 or 160, which puts them in Franklin instead of 4 or 5 years or 2 or 3 years out? Now they're 7 or 8 years out.
I think that's part of the problem that we have. We're trying to create housing, but there's not a lot of turnover. So there's a lengthy list, and there's no turnover.
I understood. And I guess, I don't know, I guess that's why I struggle, and I know some of my fellow counselors struggle with that emergency list of local people that want to live in Franklin. To lose their spot on the list, to get a roof over their head in Medway, I don't know if this is something that we can talk to our legislators about. Because it certainly sounds like that's where that would need to be changed. Maybe coming off the emergency list in the other towns, but stay on the list in Franklin, where they want to live in the first place. Again, one person's opinion. Jamie?
So through you, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So in terms of the Code of Massachusetts regulation, that is true. We would need to lobby as a community-wide with our legislators to essentially advocate and work through the executive branch to try to change that CMR. The Code of Massachusetts regulations are usually the area where most state agencies put in the real, you know, it's not usually in the Mass General laws. It promulgates those over to state agencies to go ahead and promulgate those regulations. And those regulations are statewide. So when they're looking at those, they're going to have to assess the impact, obviously, of what a regulation change like that would look to across the whole Commonwealth, right? Not just Franklin. But without question, the place to start is certainly Representative Roy and the legislative delegation to, you know, begin a paper trail possibly and engage in that conversation. And I think that's where it all starts. Usually good advocacy always starts there. But make no mistake, there's very little we could do, you know, as this body other than advocate.
And I do understand that, but I also sit here and say, if I was sitting as on the Bellingham Selectman or the Rentham Selectman or the Medfield Selectman, I would feel the same way about my town. So I can't imagine that there wouldn't be overwhelming support for that type of a change. But I'd certainly, as one, would like to see us at least have the conversation with our legislators and start the ball in motion. Now, is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to anything on this issue? Please come forward. Just name and address, please.
My name is Sue Borchard. I live on McKinley Road in Franklin. Two things. As the retired Assistant Director of Special Education, I want to tell you how thankful I was that there were group homes in the town of Franklin for our students who were turning 21 and going into the care of Department of Developmental Services. It's really nice to see our own stay in the community. I would be curious, for all those people who are on those lists, what kinds of services do we have in the town of Franklin to help them hold it together while they are on the brink of homelessness. I'm particularly aware of some people with significant medical issues and undiagnosed mental health.
And I think some of those issues will be discussed in our next discussion and presentation.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't get answered early on in the next presentation, please come back forward and ask it again, and we'll get responses for you.
So we do have a service coordinator for our senior disabled residents that is with us one day a week, and they do help our residents get food stamps or get on health care, Social Security, get their Medicare benefits and things of that nature. But one thing that I think is probably an important factor, back in 1990, the government passed a law saying that senior public housing would now have a population of 13.5% of the residents would be under the age of 60 and would have a disability. Those people that we house, we maintain 13.5% of disabled people under the age of 60, but when they reach 60 years old, all of a sudden on our list, they become a senior. They don't lose their mental health issues. They don't regain mobility for those that are physically disabled. So as the years go by, 30 years since the law was passed, we have more than double residents on our in our housing stock that came into public housing as disabled persons. So the needs of our residents have really increased over the years. Also, I did want to mention that I mistakenly left it out earlier. The average rent for our senior developments right now is about $425. Included in our senior rents is heat, hot water, and electricity. We also clear the property of snow and keep the lawns up. Our family developments, the average rent right now is about $700. So we have a good round amount of people, some that are very low paying less than $100, and some that are on the higher side. So we have a good average that's maintaining a surplus agency.
Thank you, Lisa. Sure, please come forward.
Hi, I'm Reverend Kathy McAdams from St. John's Episcopal Church. Thank you for your presentation and for the work that you do. You've been talking about project-based housing. Do you also administrate the voucher-based housing, Section 8?
Franklin Housing Authority does not have a Section 8 program. When Section 8 was introduced, well before my years in Franklin Housing Authority, the town wasn't open to having a Section 8 voucher program at Franklin Housing Authority. It wasn't accepted.
Thank you, Lisa. Is there anyone else? Thank you, Lisa.
So lastly, I just want to say thank you to the town of Franklin for giving us the property that we have that has our housing on it. Our most recent property on Plain Street, we have property on Brook Street, all of Central Park Terrace, the Theron Metcalf School, our Walnut Avenue property, all was donated by the town. So without working with the town, we wouldn't be here either. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. I think one final comment from Jamie.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So earlier in the conversation, folks, I think all the counselors and many folks here, first of all, I want to thank such a large crowd for coming out. I think last week the room was packed as well. I think that speaks to the issue quite a bit. It's been rare to have the room filled. And I think last week we saw that with the Community Preservation Act discussion. I know many of you hear about this issues, but it was kind of a little bit of discussion of like, what can we do, right? And just a quick plug. One, I think the Community Preservation Act discussion last week, Lisa brought up an excellent point You know, we're not going to be able to solve this problem with one program, with one entity, with one check. Her point last week about the CPA and using a modest amount of funds to then leverage additional money was kind of mind-blowing to me about the numbers that she was throwing out there. And so I make that quick reminder that at some point, hopefully in the next month or so, as instructed by all of you, we're going to be bringing that discussion back to the council, and that the community that's here and listening at home should really pay attention, hopefully through the year, because that is something that we can do locally that is modest on each homeowner that I think can put a big dent into this issue. Second, I would also make a quick plug at the March 4th Economic Development Subcommittee meeting. The chair, Melanie Hamlin, is going to begin a discussion on some bylaw amendment proposals that will come before all of you that will achieve a lot of these same objectives in trying to make an incentive-based system in our community called inclusionary zoning and trying to get more deed restricted affordable units. A lot of people come up to me, for example, like they always ask me about the Dean Ave project where you have 250 apartments there. Well, those are all market rate apartments. If we had done some of the bylaw changes that Brian and the staff and the EDC are going to consider, 10, 15, 20% of those would be deed restricted. You're talking another 40 apartments over there that would be much further along in trying to address some of the issue and some of the demand that are there. And so I think that through the Affordable Housing Trust, there's some members over there. The town of Franklin is over its 10% quota under the 40B law. I think you see, even despite our best efforts in this community, where we really have done a lot and we're discussing a lot more, it's not enough. And obviously some of the things that we have been discussing with CPA, as well as hopefully the inclusionary zoning concept, will continue to show the town's efforts and the things that we can do right now. Not 10 years from now, but right now. The Eaton Place project up there that's been built, the 60 units, we're currently working also through the trust build in another 60 units of Franklin Ridge up there, another 60 units of housing. You know, we expect that project to take 7-8 years. You know, and that's a long time, and we're going to do it, and we're going to keep on it. But I think that some of the other issues I just mentioned are some of the items that we can work on right now that hopefully in the real short term can make a difference. So we talked about the things we wanted to do, and while we had a good audience, I thought I'd make a quick plug to those things, and hopefully people can participate in the March 4th meeting at 5:30. We haven't posted the agenda yet, but hopefully folks can look out for those additional agenda items in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, James. Thank you, folks, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item on the agenda is discussion, transitional assistance discussion.
Mayor Nelms and friends.
Kevin
thank you for this opportunity to talk about our social services program, specifically with regard to housing issues and homelessness. I don't think we could have two better advocates than Erin Rogers and Maggie Gunderson, our social service coordinators, who are knowledgeable and skilled in this area. Erin has put together some slides to explain our role in the community and our collaborations with other organizations and agencies. So, Erin?
Thank you. So in our role as social service coordinators, we see residents who are both seniors and people under 60, and we assist with a variety of needs. We do applications and resources and make referrals, and those referrals come from all different facets, family, friends, neighbors, community agencies, town departments, local churches. And I think a question had come up about, you know, is there assistance when someone's kind of in transition? Those are the types of things that we do. And certainly one of the more critical issues is homelessness. During this past year, we have assisted 14 different households. 11 of those were adults with no children, and 3 were families with children. And we will say that number has declined somewhat. During 2016 to 2017, we saw, 40 over the course of 2 years. So it has gone down a little bit in terms of who we are seeing. And some of the causes we're seeing for those issues are certainly, you know, mental health issues. I think a good example would be, you know, someone who probably struggled their whole life. They live with their parents who kind of support them, and then that parent is elderly and passes away, and they're just kind of left to struggle and try to make their way. And then certainly medical issues and disabilities, a lot of those are unforeseen. Somebody might be temporarily out of work, which puts them behind, or permanently, and they have no way to pay their rent or their mortgage. Loss of income, again, someone paying, you know, living check to check, and they lose their job. They really struggle.
And we also see people oftentimes working two jobs, and
yeah.
just, you know, one of them goes, and it's yeah. causes problems.
Domestic violence, we see, you know, this could be somebody who separates quickly and possibly loses all their belongings, or certainly their income due to that, and have nowhere to go. We've seen people who lose their home due to fire, which is, you know, obviously very sudden and kind of unplanned for. And then a big reason we see is landlords selling or renovating. We've seen quite a few people who have lived in the same apartment for 20 years, and the rent hasn't gone up too much, and then the landlord sells the apartment, and they can't find a rent close to that anywhere. So that's a big issue. So when someone does come to us, we try to help them with emergency shelter right away. So for families with children, we always suggest that they go to their DTA office. The closest one here is in Framingham.
So that's the Department of Transitional Assistance?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the reason for that is just about all the family shelters in Massachusetts are run by the DTA, and they have workers there who can help with that process. There's also a great kind of packet that's online that was done by the, I think, Rosie's Place, and it kind of walks through all the documentation you will need and kind of what that process is. And I think that's surprising to some people too, that, you know, if you have a family and you need to apply to shelter, it's a little bit more complicated. There is paperwork, and you have to apply, and you have to show certain documents, and that can be tricky for some people.
For instance, you have to have your children's birth certificates, and if you're homeless or you've been living in a car, you don't necessarily have that information.
Right. So then adults without children, that's a little bit tricky because each shelter is kind of run on their own, so we help them call each shelter directly. And they have all different rules. Some you have to be there at a certain time, and it's, you know, first come, first serve. Others you kind of apply ahead of time. Most of them you need to be out during the day, which gets tricky for seniors or people with disabilities. They need to be out, you know, by 7 or 8 in the morning and stay out. And it's a very frustrating process when somebody does want to find a shelter to call the list. A lot of times you're leaving messages and waiting for calls back, or they just say, you know, we don't have any beds, and that, you know, they don't have any other suggestions.
And many of the shelters are not taking anyone who's currently using substances, particularly, you know, alcohol. So it's just a deal breaker.
There is a hotline for people in domestic violence situations, and by calling that SafeLink hotline, they kind of track all the beds across the state. But again, those, they fill up. You know, it's not an automatic. If you are in a domestic violence situation, there still has to be a bed available for you. And new this winter, there is a shelter system in Milford. It's a group of charities that rotate among three churches, and they will open if it is below 30 degrees or if there is significant snow expected. So there's like a phone number people can call before 3 o'clock to see if it's gonna be opened. And I know I checked in today, and I think they've only seen about 3 people this winter, so it's not as busy as they thought it would be. So I think it is important to note that the majority of people who come to see us and looking for help don't really want to go to a shelter. Typically, I think they're hoping that we have access to some other resources that we don't have. And when we mention a shelter, you know, if they have a car, usually they're more willing to stay in their car or kind of couch hop or maybe borrow some money from different groups of people to stay in a hotel. So for the longer term, we do help with housing applications. We help with the applications that Lisa just spoke about. And I know her numbers sounded discouraging, but we certainly do see people that apply for housing in Franklin, and we do see them get it. We also help apply for Section 8, and that is a lengthy waiting list as well. I don't know what the numbers are, but it's very long. And then there's another voucher that we help people apply for. It is like a state-aided voucher, so similar to Section 8. It can be mobile, but not every housing authority manages them. Here in Franklin, we don't, but Bellingham has some, so we have helped people apply in the past there. Okay, and then, so a great resource for people who are homeless or almost homeless are the Massachusetts Housing Consumer Education Centers. And these are regional nonprofits funded by the Department of Housing and Community Development. So there's 9 different regions, and in Franklin we're covered by RCAP, which is out in Worcester. And they have a bunch of different programs to try to prevent homelessness. They have RAFT, which is like short-term assistance for families that can cover like past due rent, utility bills, or if they need to move like first, last, and security. But families cannot get more than $4,000 in a year. And this is for people, this is to prevent homelessness, so it's for people who are still living in their homes or apartments. Another program is Homebase, and that is to kind of help families who are homeless kind of get over the hurdle. So these can help people cover first, last, and security. It can also help with like furniture, or they can use it as like a monthly stipend over, you know, over the course of the year. So that's a great program. We have had some people with that, and it can be a little challenging to find landlords who are familiar with it enough to accept it. I had talked to a worker at RCAP, and they felt like there wasn't a lot of education in this area. And then at RCAP, they also do applications for the vouchers, and there's a veterans voucher. I think one of the challenges that people face is, especially for like RAFT and Homebase, you need to go there in person, and it's out in Worcester, which can be certainly challenging from here, and it can be a long day, you know, waiting to get some help. So just to kind of touch more on the mental health piece of it, I mean, that's certainly a huge piece of it, and we, according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, only 60% of people with mental illness get mental health care. So in Franklin, we have some resources that we refer people to. We have the MHOT, which is the Elder Mental Health Outreach Team, and that's a grant-funded program, and it's available to residents of Franklin and some surrounding 6 towns. But the people have to be 60 years and older, and it provides mental health counseling and information to people free of charge, so it doesn't matter what their insurance is, which is great. We have a mental health clinician named Gail Barassa, and she's great. She's very busy. There is a waiting list, and unfortunately, you know, a bit of a time before she can see somebody. If an emergency, she'll certainly try to step in sooner. But other than that, some other programs in Franklin are the jail diversion program, I think, is helping residents of Franklin. There's a referral service that we can use through the William James College interface. And other mental health agencies, you know, for emergencies, we would refer to Riverside Crisis. There is some, you know, local counseling centers. We're finding that any counseling center that accepts MassHealth, there's a waiting period. So you, even if you're in need of mental health and you're willing to get it, there's always a waiting period.
And most of the folks you're dealing with would be on MassHealth.
Yes, yeah. So when someone is homeless, some other referrals we make are certainly to legal assistance. If they're over 60, we'll make a referral to the Elder at Risk Program or Protective Services. We work a lot with other communities other organizations in the community, like the food pantry and the YMCA, local churches. And we work an awfully lot with St. Vincent de Paul. And I think they have some representatives here tonight, but I did want to just say that I spoke with Frank Nosek of St. Vincent de Paul, and he had said that their data is kind of opposite of ours, where we're seeing less people, they're seeing more. So it could be suggested that people are going there for help instead of to us.
Well, I think a couple of years ago, we started to see a real influx. We had 40 people in like 18 months. We started to work really closely with St. Vincent de Paul, and I think they got really good at it. And I don't know if the gentleman wants to come up and share this discussion, because they have been an incredible resource for us, not only in terms of the homeless population, but in terms of many folks who are struggling, families, working families, and adults who need assistance to keep their housing for whatever reason. So they've been an incredible asset to this community. Really wonderful. And I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Karen and Don. Questions from the council? Councilor Kelly.
Great job, ladies. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, one of the things that's really stuck out as somebody who works a lot of tenants in town, right, is there, I really wish there was a mechanism in town to educate landlords about the programs, because ultimately, many of the, I would say many of the landlords, if not most of your landlords in town, are afraid to take anybody on voucher. It's new to the landlords in Franklin. If you're a landlord in, or an investment owner in Boston, or in one of the major metropolitan cities in our area, you get it. You've done that for a long time. You understand how it has to work and the inspection process. But in this area, we really haven't had that until suburban sprawl has moved in. Mm-hmm. So I think for us, I would really love to see a program, and you know, I'm happy to provide 90% of the landlords in town, right, where we invite them to listen about what these programs can offer them. I think that would open the door to a lot of opportunities here in town.
That's a great idea.
It hasn't ever been brought forward before, and I think once, I try to educate people because I know about the programs and the policies and everything, but they need to hear somebody with authority come out and say, this isn't bad, you can take somebody. So.
Yeah, I think we could talk to DHCD, I never get that acronym right, or to one of our legislators to help facilitate that.
It's a huge problem we're facing in our communities, and it's going to get worse. We need to focus on how we educate the people who have the housing stock in order to then get the people that we need the most help to receive that help. So
I do think that the state government is finally getting it, that there is definitely a dearth of housing. And I know the governor has put $1 billion into it thus far, and the legislation that's pending in the State House now, I know Karen Spilko wants to do some more work beyond just zoning, but building, so, and these programs. So I think it's a good time to,
The governor speaks on, in the same state, the governor speaking about it.
There you go.
You know, he's focused on it. I think it's something, as a town, we have to encourage our representatives and the legislators to continue to focus on that for us and bring that back to our community, because we're missing out on great opportunities. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for our hard work as well.
Thank you, Councilor Kelly. Councilor DeLarco?
Thanks, Mr. Thank you, through the chair. Thanks, you guys do a great job. A couple things, I know the homeless thing, but I've been talking to a few people that, you know, they're on the verge, but they don't know where to go for like fuel assistance. And
oh, they go to the senior center.
That's exactly where they go.
Yes,
you can go there and fill out an application because, you know, they have a place, but, you know, it's tough. And, you know, they don't know where to go.
The best thing to do is call. Yeah. We have, I think we still have a printout of everything they're going to need when they come, which we can send to them, or they can come pick it up. Can we set up an appointment? Takes half an hour, 40 minutes, and they'll be set.
Yeah, there's a lot of programs out there that could help them.
Yeah,
stay
that also,
where they are.
That also and, would give them the potential for a reduced rate for their utility as well as weatherization of their home.
Yeah, often by coming in for a fuel assistance appointment, you get a good picture, and so you can kind of see all the different programs they can qualify for, and then we can help them with other applications like food stamps or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Councilor DeLarco. Councilor Joe.
Just as I'd be remiss as the communication liaison not to give you guys a plug,
on your website, I'm not going to read all of the services that they offer because there are countless.
Councilor Jones.
But there are countless services that you offer, and one of the best resources that anybody can totally reach out and utilize is actually to go to the Town of Franklin's website under SeniorCenter/Council on Aging and see not only the people who are available for you to contact, but the countless amount of offerings that the Senior Center has to offer. Something that, as an example, dementia-friendly, fuel assistance, Friends of Franklin, low vision support, etc. There are just countless things that the Senior Center has to offer to our citizens as well as people even outside of Franklin. And I just wanted to give you guys a plug on that because I don't really even think anyone understands to what level of support that the Senior Center is to our community. It's by far one of our best assets.
I would like to make a point that even though it's called the Senior Center, with regard to social services, we provide that to all adults, younger and seniors.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Councilor Jones. Councilor Bazzani.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, I just want to say when I took on some of this this cause, I found that there's sort of like a silent army of people that have been engaging the homeless cause and bringing blankets and gloves out to the homeless. And there's some of them in the audience right now, and dealing with this head on. And the face of the homeless in Franklin isn't just as in your face as you might think. It's sort of like a very subtle way of living on edge. They work the graveyard shifts. They sleep in their cars. They shower at the Y. That's how they go about their life. They're living on the edge. They don't have a home because they can't afford a home. And that's the face of the homeless in Franklin right now. It's not like San Francisco or like sleeping on benches in Boston. And there's people in Franklin that are actually reaching out to these people. And they've been doing it for years. And that's how I found out about it. And there were people in Franklin sleeping outside in October, and that's how I got involved with this. And I think that I was shocked, candidly. I've lived in Franklin all my life, but I just actually, on a very, very visceral level, I just like to see places where they could go keep warm, and I was surprised that St. Mary's was not letting them. There was really nothing, nowhere to go. So I would just like to see either a fund set up where they could come either to you and let them go somewhere to keep warm or get money to go somewhere to keep warm. I did put phone numbers out, your phone numbers out, so that they could get money to pay their fuel bills, electric bills, again, living on the edge, and get help. And but there is a small army of people that are helping them, so that was, I took some comfort in that, but we need to do more. So either we do inclusion, either through the inclusionary zoning that Jamie touched upon, where when developers come to town, and not touching upon the 40B, but through inclusionary zoning with affordability, inclusionary affordability, and where a developer has to do a certain percentage of affordable housing in his projects and give back to Franklin, that's what I'd like to see happen. And we can do that. We as a council can pass that kind of zoning now. So, and we don't have to wait for the Community Preservation Act, but that is also going to be a key component. And that's got to get on the ballot, and that's got to get passed, because we can use those funds to help with places for homeless people or for funds for homeless people. So it's all got to come together. We could do that as a council in the very near future. So that's where I see all this going if we really want to help the homeless. So we can do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Bazzanti. Is there any other councilor that would like? I know we have people in the audience that would like to speak. Now would be the right time.
Again, my name is Francis Weber, and I represent St. Vincent de Paul Society. Kathy is giving you some literature that we wanted you to have and gather this. What we're about, we're a away organization of St. Mary's. They're basically all volunteers. We go home visits to people that are having needs for different things, can't afford the utilities and oil, etc. We send two volunteers that will go into their home, assess their needs, discuss how we can help them. We help Franklin people. We have been for the last 30 years. And the information we just sent out, we've helped 186 people, families, I should say, in the year of 2019, with clothing from our pantry, which is donated through the church, which is very generous to us, clothing, resources from the town, state, and other organizations. Homeless initiated meetings were held in 2018 at the library and attended by 25 key Franklin leaders, including church leaders, town administrator, assistant administrator, superintendent of schools, YMCA, Friends of Franklin, and others. You'll see a breakdown on what we have put together as far as homeless goes from 2017 to 18, and now 2019 to 20, and also in the last few months. We have three categories for homeless: transits, people who do not have a resident in Franklin, usually have minimal belongings and no minimum source of income. Concerns, may have addictions or mental health issues. Assistance, we usually food, clothing, we can send them to the Y for showers. Resource of shelters, very difficult to get in organizations that offer counseling. Known homeless, people who do not have a resident in Franklin, but reside in Franklin, either by couch shopping, living in the cars, or living in the woods. Concerns, may have addiction, mental health issues, or suffered abuse. Assistance, we usually give food, clothing, broader expanse of resources, possibly temporary shelter until certain circumstances, severe cold weather, or gift cards for gas. People who are assumed to be homeless, people who reside in Franklin, who have been evicted, or who may be the victim of abuse, good chance of being known homeless. Concerns we have, safety of the person or family as they leave their current environment, ability for them to stay in their current residence in other safe place. The assistance, we have financial review, including what expenses can be eliminated. In other words, when we get there, lower cable, some people love to have cable and not pay other bills. And we have programs being used for food stamps, self-help, Franklin Housing Authority, RAF data, Veterans Assistance, social service, financial assistance with current bills, rent, etc. That's about what we do, gentlemen and ladies. So I hope that the paperwork that we gave you would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Is there anyone else? Please come forward. Just identify name and address, please. Or names and address.
Good evening. My name is Lynn Colling. I'm the executive director of the Franklin Food Pantry.
Hi, my name is Amy Cataldo. I'm the assistant director, and I'm also a Franklin resident.
Hi, my name is Sue Kilcoyne. I'm the operations director at the Franklin Food Pantry and a Franklin resident as well.
So thank you very much for addressing homelessness in our community tonight, and thank you to our partners who we also work with for supporting our neighbors. We wanted to take this moment just to let people know a little bit more about the pantry. We are open to all residents, and we service our neighbors 3 weeks per month, and all of this is also on our website at franklinfoodpantry.org. All shoppers must register with the pantry first and make an appointment by calling us. So we're open Tuesday through Thursday, from 9:30 a.m. till 1 p.m. and then Fridays for walk-in from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. We encourage folks before they shop with us to call and make an appointment, but if someone walks in, we will help them, and we work with the Senior Center. Some of our clients do also live at Central Park Terrace. We work with St. Vincent de Paul, so there is a lot of collaboration amongst us. We also, in 2019, we distributed over 302,000 pounds of food to 1,154 individuals. There were 6,727 visits to the pantry. That's a 12% increase over 2018. And we also saw a 13% increase in the number of seniors being served last year. So as a private nonprofit organization, we depend entirely on donations from individuals. We received no funding from the town or state. We had reached out to the council members yesterday, or I think it may have been Monday, with an email inviting you in for a tour. I know many of you have been to the pantry, but if you have time on March 2nd, we would love to have you come in for a tour. If that doesn't work for you, please give us a call and we will accommodate your schedules too. Again, we all work together and we collaborate with one another, and our services are much stronger together, and we really do appreciate your service and your support to the town. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please come forward. And again, just name and address. Please.
Kim Uchow, Briarwood Road, member of New England Chapel, and a founding member of Pathway to a Better Life in the Milford area temporary emergency shelters. And how that really came about probably was I was dealing with some of the homeless people that come to our church and sending them up to Milford, and was hanging out at the Milford Senior Center as well as the Franklin Senior Center, because I work with them as well. And we were dealing with a lot of the same population in the hotels and everything there. And their problem was a little bit different from Franklin's, in which they had people coming to their senior center at 4:30 on a Friday afternoon going, I have no place to stay, where do I go? Which is, I don't think we necessarily had that in Franklin, but they were getting that on a very regular basis in Milford. As a result of that, because they are good because they have the Milford Humanitarian Area Coalition, they have a lot of other services, some very active churches there, they actually were able to put together a group which ended up being Pathway to a Better Life. And in 9 months, we went from pie in the sky to opening up the temporary area shelters. We currently have 3 churches that are open on a rotating basis. We started at 18 degrees. We decided to go up to 30 degrees. We patterned it after Northbridge, so there's actually another shelter in the area because there's one in Blackstone Valley. We patterned ours after theirs. If we wanted to start one in Franklin, I got the template. We could do it, but it's a lot of work. There are grants out there because Pathway actually got a $10,000 grant from a foundation in Metro West in order to buy cots. They are open from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. when they are actually open. We lock our doors at about 9 p.m. However, we've also done something in which, because the hospital knows that, and the hospital's in Milford, they actually get people that may be there later than 9. The police in Milford have basically said they will come across some homeless people after 9. That wouldn't necessarily work. So we actually have a deal with the police departments that if they know that we're actually open if we meet our criteria, but if no one walks in the door by 9 p.m., we send the volunteers home, because it's not worth being open if no one's there. If they're actually open and the police or the hospital come up with someone that may need some place to stay, instead of staying in the lobby of the police department or the emergency room lobby, the Milford police have offered to actually pick them up and bring them to the shelter. We have also reached out to all the police departments in the area. I actually met with Callie with the police diversion last week. The Medway police actually has sent someone there. We welcome anyone that needs a place here. If they can't get there, we would like to say that the Franklin Police would also help to take them there. We do have one church that's going to be hopefully up and coming that is going to be in Hopedale, which is why we call it Milford area, because they're not all in Milford. There's some of them in Hopedale. The interesting part is, although it wasn't really a town-sanctioned group, we would not have been able to do it without the support of a lot of the different town departments. At our weekly meetings, we had the chief of police there, we had the fire department, we had their medical director there, we had the highway people there, but we did our Cori checks. We had a few individuals where we weren't sure whether or not they should be allowed to volunteer. The chief of police sat with us and helped us make the decision. We would not have been able to be as well as we are without having all those town people, even though it wasn't a town sanctioned thing, participating with in terms of guiding us. It's very doable. It's extremely time consuming. I've learned a tremendous amount serving on that committee, and I'm happy to say that I'm really pleased at how far we are. They haven't gotten as far as they would like to see. There's some people saying that, well, they think there's going to be too big of a police presence. Well, no, that's not really true unless you're being brought by the police. But I think anytime it's someplace new, it is maybe some fear in terms of what may go on there. We'd like to tell them, you know, to try it at least one time. If you look at this brochure, these are actually pictures of people living in the woods in Milford, and we went out and did that. The one in terms of our guest information handout, these are actually two of the churches that are participating. There's a lot of guidelines in terms of that. We have like three churches who are trying to participate, but they haven't quite done the building code. And it's very doable in terms of, as a temporary shelter, it's not as stringent as a permanent shelter, but you can only be open a maximum of 35 days in a calendar year. And there's other roles, and you have to have occupancy. But that's us in a nutshell.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please come forward. And just name and address, please.
Sure. My name is Jacob Yunker. I'm the pastor of the Franklin United Methodist Church. I live on Marvin Ave. I have a question, and that is, it seems to me that from your presentation that most of the services that you are referring people out to are outside of the town of Franklin. And I am curious if there has been any thought, or maybe there is and I just don't know about it, a social services stakeholder meeting where all of the different potential social service agencies and identities, including local churches, could be invited to gather so that we know what each other are doing, but also be able to work together to provide community resources for our community members so that we don't have to continually refer them 20 miles away.
We actually have done something like that, and it was the inspiration of the St. Vincent de Paul Society about a year and a half ago,
mm-hmm.
Which was a terrific meeting, and then there was a follow-up meeting to mm-hmm. that. And we have also attended interfaith council meetings for various and sundry presentations, but I think a global or a more universal, comprehensive meeting would be definitely useful.
And the town could help make that entity come to life, I think. I don't think the town has to fund it, but the town can help put some force behind these are the social service agencies in town or entities willing to help.
Yeah, I think the senior center could spearhead that effort.
Excellent, thank you.
And certainly we can assist. And in actuality, I've been invited to come to an interfaith council meeting the first week of March. So I plan on being there. Jamie's coming with me, and that might be a great opportunity to start the conversation with them. but I think that's a great idea. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this issue?
I just really want to emphasize the last speaker. My name is Diana Bardsley. I live here in Franklin. I've been a homeless and housing advocate since the late 80s, since my own family's brushed with homelessness. Throughout that, I was a coordinator up until 2004, the late 90s to 2004, as a coordinator of the Scattered Site Family Shelter Program at SMOP. And one of the most important things, I think, besides all the great work everyone's doing here in this town, okay, I commend you all, is to have these informal or these meetings with all of the agencies. I just kind of want to second that aspect. The people to have some kind of a meeting to get together so that everybody can provide the services needed in a more uniform fashion. People know where they can go, who they can call. And, you know, I'm really, really good. And I appreciate this meeting. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else? Please.
Hi, I'm Kathy Nozick, and I am a member of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And back in 2018, St. Vincent de Paul invited a lot of the groups in town to get together, schools, churches. We had Jamie there, we had Jeff Metting there. We had the police, the fire, the superintendent of schools. A lot of people came, a lot of churches were invited to come into that meeting, and we were going to be putting together a resource of agencies, places people can go, ways people can get help. Unfortunately, the person that volunteered to do that became ill, and he has had to back away from doing that. He offered to do it. We have not dropped the ball on that. It is still something that is going to be done, and resources will be going out to the different churches and different organizations stating what is available in this area and in Franklin.
Thank you.
Chime in on that. There is a document on the town's website called Real Life Aid, which has a lot of that information. It's pretty comprehensive. I will admit that it does need to be updated, but it is some pretty solid information there.
And again, anything that we as a council can do to assist, obviously, that's why this was on tonight's agenda. And I want to thank everyone who came out tonight to hear and to participate in this discussion. I know myself as well, I'm sure many of my fellow councilors, as well as many people at home, were probably not aware of half of the different things that are going on. So I'd like to thank, obviously, the Senior Center, the Food Pantry, Vincent DePaul, the Way to a Better Life, these organizations for coming out tonight and for talking to us as well as the entire Franklin community now that we're on cable. And I think it's a great start, and there's work to be done. I think we're all aware of that. And as a council, we're aware. We want to participate as much as we can. Karen, I know there are many things the Senior Center are doing and trying to pull these groups together. And I think with Jamie, maybe we can assist and get this group started and getting the information out to our taxpayers and our residents of Franklin. Anything to add, Jamie? Okay. Thank you all very much.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.